Whisky FM are delighted to share the Balvenie Stories podcast, a series which introduces you to incredible people who created this wonderful whisky.
I'm Gemma Patterson, the global ambassador for the Balvenie, and you're listening to the Balvenie Stories series, a trip behind the scenes of the Balvenie, meeting the people and exploring the places that helped shape these incredible whiskies. What I love most about my job is that my days are full of stories. Stories about how our whisky is made, the people who've helped to make it, and the stories behind Balvenie that really bring our whiskies to life. Over the last few months, I've been travelling across the world to meet with the people who helped to make the Balvenie Stories series. In this episode, we're going to explore what Roasted Peanuts, The Legend of the Green Lady, and A Retirement Poem have in common. Find out as we explore the story behind A Day of Dark Barley. This story begins at the heart of the distillery, in our courtyard, which is surrounded by our maltings, our mash house, still house, and warehouse 24. It's absolutely pouring with rain right now. I'm sheltering in our distillery visitor centre, and I'm about to brave the weather to speak to Robbie Gormley and Brian Webster about a very specific day in the history of the Balvenie. In July of 1992, Robbie and Brian were working at the distillery together when some unusual barley was delivered to the courtyard. Dark barley. Barley that had been over-roasted. It was dark and brittle.
So we're here right in the middle of the courtyard at Balvenie. This would be exactly where the barley's delivered normally, isn't it?
Yes, it's where we stand here, yep. And it goes down that hole there and over to the mash house.
The day that barley came in, it wasn't on a lorry, it was in bogs. So on a day like this, it was a hurry to get the bogs inside before they could get the wheat.
So you've been here more than 42 years, so it was really your responsibility to kind of take control of this barley when it was dumped on our doorstep.
Well, it wasn't really my responsibility because I wasn't actually in the maltings all that time, but I was in settling the team to make a decision and what was going to do about it and to control the thing, get inside before weather like this got the better of it. It's quite physical work in here. It's not just an easy job. Are they good at it? I've seen people get in there and think, oh, I'll manage this, no problem. And within a week, you know, I don't want to be here because it's too much hard work.
Mm-hmm. But then in those days, Robbie, the boys weren't afraid of hard work like you and me.
No, you had stuck in there.
We had to use our muscle power.
Aye.
I remember a day when that barley came in. It took everybody. Everybody's by surprise, and everybody was scuttling about as though you just stood in a nest of rats in the old scarpet.
You said it was panic stations.
Yes. So Robbie just went around and said, "Here, lads, look, we've got this malt. It came in just now." And I said, "Oh well, it's the first we heard it was coming today."
Like I say, it was a day like this, we had to get it inside quick, anyway.
That's right.
And this is miserable. It's pouring with rain on us right now.
Yeah, and the drips are going down my back as well.
Well, can I go inside and see if our boot was stored? How it got there, man?
Yes.
Could we inside?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Rain.
Let's go and have a look.
So now we're about to walk into a very special place for the Balvenie, our maltings. Very few distilleries still have their own malt floor, and the fact that we do means that we're able to experiment with our barley in a way that other distilleries just can't anymore. The Maltings is a humble two-storey building, and this is really where whisky making begins. The dry barley stored upstairs in the loft, and in small batches of 8 tonnes, we drop that barley into one of two steeping tanks to activate it. Once the barley's steeped, we then spread it out over the ground floor, and over the course of the next few days, it'll start to grow and germinate. Robbie's worked in this building for over 27 years, so he definitely knows a thing or two about how to get the most flavour out of this humble ingredient.
Oh, smell it, smell.
Oh, come on,
smell
it.
So good.
It's not an orange smell, sir. Touch
I think it's like bready, like sweet bready.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, kind of yeasty smell about it as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, we call this the Balvenie Gym.
That's right, the Balvenie Gym.
Oh, there's no fat boys over here. There's no pot bellies or anything like that. They're lean, mean, and they get done with the job. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, you seen Brooke out this way down here, but it's
And I
middle
suppose
of the winter.
There's no climate control or anything in here, so it's all just natural temperature. So
that's
it can be
right,
quite
aye.
Cold in the winter, and then, I mean, I suppose it can get pretty hot
in
here
the
in summer.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell just by picking up the barley with your hands
aye.
How it's getting on?
Aye, just by looking at it, feeling it. At least I was saying here, what you're looking for is roots but no shoots.
Roots but no shoots.
Roots but no shoots. Well done.
Oh, Brian's just filled the hand with some wet, sodden barley here.
That's the barley just out this deep, so you can feel how wet it is and how soft it is, because it's been soaking
yep.
wheat.
Yeah. Brian, are you just running around gathering up little piles of barley?
I'm the runner today.
I guess like, we can look at it all the different stages now. So this is the barley that's just been steeped.
Aye, that's straight out the steeps, are soft.
Wet and soft.
A couple of days old, you can start to see the root that's growing.
Can you tell exactly how many days, Robbie, when you look at this?
Well, that's probably about 2 days, I would say. Coming up to the third day, maybe.
You can feel it's a little bit drier.
Aye.
You can see the roots starting
but
to...
But if you just split that seed, you would see the root growing up inside. Which
yes.
we call aquaspire. It's growing up inside the seed. So that aquaspire might stop before it gets to the start to shoot.
And you know what really blows my mind is that every single little grain of barley, which must be millions upon millions in this building, is alive.
Yes, aye. Everyone is growing.
Each seed is alive.
That's right, aye.
Living organisms.
So that's why when they're growing, they're rubbing together, they're moving all the time. That's what generates its own heat.
Just like a little baby, really.
A little baby,
they're
Robbie.
All your little babies, Robbie.
They're all little Robbie's little babies. They're all growing.
So you can imagine the same carrying the barley upstairs. So come upstairs there and put it all in here in this kind of space like this we had. And all these bags lined up in rows, ready for when it was required. So how long did it sit here, Brian? About a couple of weeks? A month?
At least about a month anyhow.
Yeah, a month anyway.
It was July 1992. We've still got the old fashioned records, Brian.
Yeah, I showed
your signature and everything.
I did
them.
Have a look at that. Yes,
got
I speak to an archivist, Davey here.
Really?
Yes, I saw that. Yes, yes. Oh, well, you see, it took us all by surprise, and it had to go somewhere, and we couldn't take it over there because all our bins was full, you see. Mm-hmm. So we had to wait until we used
empty the hay bin,
and then put it into the hay bin, and then just carry on mashing as normal.
If it means with the hay bin is the barley going for here, or the malt going for here, of course, is kept separate from the stuff that buy in. So
yes.
We caught the hay bin, just the hay. Not going to call.
Hame as in home.
Hame as in home, yes. Oh. And we've got 5 bins over there. 1 bin for the hame bin and 4 bins for bought malt that's coming in by lorry. Yeah.
So we had to wait till that was empty. So we stopped those steep in to empty the kiln so we could get it across. So again, getting the bags up the stairs into the kiln to put it across to the other side. So again, carrying all these bags up into this flight of stairs, up into the kiln.
Did you take a wee break in between?
Oh, I'm sure we did.
I'm sure they did. Definitely. Yes.
Right. So then it was just across to Brian. Like I say, we took a quick look at it and I feel it in your hand. And it's quite brittle stuff and you could really smell the roasting. So
what did
totally
it smell
different. Like? It's like roasted peanuts. Can really burnt.
A burnt smell.
Aye.
I often thought it was, you know how you used to get burnt comments?
Aye.
It just smelt like that. Mm-hmm. You know, when a kill wasn't doing its job properly, you got burned.
You get the floor underneath, you get too hot or something happened to the pan, they were burning the kilns across, and the fact they're going across the road. But that kind of, I didn't know, I don't know, like the burnt commons, like, but yeah. That really, really strong burnt smell
about
it.
Yes, brittle in your hand,
you could almost crush yourself.
It's quite unusual to use that kind of barley in whiskey. Normally that would be used for beer, chocolate malt, they call it.
Well, this was a new thing at day. It just caught us all off by hope, really, didn't it?
Oh, well, I spoke about it before. I can, when we got any ideas that we could even try something different, and somebody came up with this idea of the chocolate malt, so we tried that, and we tried the crystal malt as well.
Yes.
It wasn't a block like that, it was just the same type of feel to it.
But not as heavy roasted.
It wasn't a burnt like that stuff, no. It's up to the same idea.
You know, that's what I really love about our floor Maltins, is that they're traditional. And, you know, you're saying the conveyor belt and all the systems that we have here predate your career here. So they're, you know, over the 60s, the 50s. But yet, you're always trying new things. You're always thinking outside the box. And our Maltins here are kind of like a playground where you get to experiment. Well,
you can get the chance to do that sort of things, aye. And you're lucky, like you say, you're lucky you can do that. Meet a lot of folk might say, no, no, leave things traditional as it is. That's it. They've done that for years and years and years. Don't touch it. But then come up with this, well, why not try this? Why not try it? Which is a good idea, that. And just letting you experiment with things that you wouldn't have normally see anywhere else.
And I can imagine that keeps you passionate about your job. You're not just coming in doing the same thing day in, day out. You're trying different things.
Yes, try something different.
Try something different all the time. And it gives you respect for the place as well. Can I say you get a passion for a job, fair enough. You like your job. You come in here every day. You're passionate, you want to see the job done correctly, you want to see it done right, and you want a good result at the end of the day. But you come to these experiments, why not this, why not try this? And it doesn't upset you because you're trying something different. You're keen and you're wanting that to happen.
And it must be, you know, it's so exciting now to think that that was back in 1992, that this day of dark barley when malt arrived, and now
definitely,
we have a delicious
definitely.
Whiskey.
Yes, yes.
I never thought I'd see the day that we'd be doing this, and you and me standing here right speaking about it, we think, well, that's happened right to forget.
Yes, 27 years ago, Martian. It's now that we're reaping the efforts of our work that we did in those days.
And again, you, but I appreciate
Gemma coming to us
to speak about it and getting the chance to be involved in this new.
We're so lucky to have you with all these stories to be able to tell and share. It must make you feel proud.
You come in to us, we retire thinking we'll never be bothered with a place again, and you come in and talking to us and getting involved in this, it does make you feel proud, I must say.
Yes, it does, definitely.
So we're sitting in the lounge at the Balvenie Visitor Centre. We're joined by David Stewart, MBE, and David Mayer, our Distillery Ambassador. Thank you for having us at your home, David Mayer.
Imagine. Some people do think this is my home. I mean, I've been here that long. But I had some visitors here and they said, do you live here? About a year ago, they thought this was my house.
Where you live? Gosh.
My bedroom's upstairs.
But you don't actually live here.
I don't live here. I was born here in Dufftown.
Yes.
And I live in Lossiemouth, not so far away.
But you've had a few decades working here at the distillery.
Mm-hmm. 29 years this year, so I've seen quite a few people and spread the word about what we do and how we do it, and proud to do that.
So
we've got some great people who have been working here much longer than I have.
more stories David to tell. Stewart.
But, you know, we have something like 2,500 people visiting Balvenie per year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but we prefer to look after small groups going around the distillery so that they can have a relaxed visit, ask as many questions as they like, photograph as much as they like. And I think the formula seems to be working, because we have recently been awarded the Icons of Whisky Best Visitor Attraction of the Year for this year, in fact. So we're really, really ecstatic about that. So we're very lucky that, you know, people really do enjoy the taste of Balvenie. And Balvenie hugely awarded in itself at the various competitions that are held for whisky and spirits around the world. So
we can't forget to mention David's MBE. I mean, there's no really higher reward than being made a member of the British Empire by the Queen herself, David.
It was. Mm. Well, that was a big surprise. I was never expecting that. Mm. So that was in 2016. I went through to Holyrood Palace and met the Queen just for a very short minute, and she gave me this MBE medal. So it was, it's a day I'll never forget. It's not every day you meet the Queen, is it? So,
yeah. Should we try a drop? We have two bottles to try. So we're going to taste the Day of Dark Barley. So I'm incredibly excited to open this bottle. But we actually have which is very special, a bottle of the 14 roasted malt, David, which was the first samples of this that you would have looked at back in 2006.
Yes, back in 92, you know, we were looking at sort of finishing whiskey, which is obviously a lot quicker than doing something at the distillation stage. So we thought, well, why don't we bring in some dark barley, which is used to make dark beer.
Yes.
In 92, and we brought in some heather as well, and we tiled them both. So we distilled maybe 50, 100 barrels of this whiskey back in 1992. Mm-hmm. And then the brand team decided to, you know, 14 years later, why don't we bottle some of this? And so this is the roasted malt. So it's not, I mean, it's not made a massive difference to the whiskey. I mean, it's probably given it some deeper notes, slightly more oaky notes to the whiskey. But
so we obviously just spoke to Brian and Robbie, who took us around and talked about what it was like the day, that horrible dreich day that the barley arrived.
Right,
you know,
okay.
It was just like dumped today. In the doorstep. Yeah, a bit like today.
Yes.
Dumped in the doorstep, and they had to lug every single sack up the stairs into the malt loft. Oof. One by one in the pouring rain. So
right.
Thanks to their efforts, we now have this whiskey to be able to enjoy. But speaking to Robbie, he said you picked up the barley and he said it smelled almost like roasted peanuts.
Yes,
And Brian, talking about mashing it, he said it was very... like almost thick black, like okay. Treacle in the mash tongue.
Yes.
But the spirit, you said when you looked at the spirit, it just made it a bit richer.
Just a little bit richer, just, okay. On the new spirit. And maybe this is slightly more oakier, but it's first of all bourbon barrels, so you've got that, you would expect that to be a bit more oakier anyway. And,
yeah.
But it's still very much to the Balvenie style of whiskey. You know, still got, you know, very much the Balvenie mm-hmm. character of whiskey.
On that note, I think we need a dram
We're
now.
We're thirsty, aren't we?
David, could you do the honours and open this bottle of roasted malt? I guess. Good. Oh, great sound.
Yeah, lovely sound, isn't it?
A lot of people love that sound.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. I'm getting a sort of... It's weird. It's like a sort of caramelised orange peel smell.
I feel a lot of fruitiness.
Mm. You do get a lot of citrus, maple syrup, brown sugar, all these sort of flavours. Mm.
Sometimes love all these things,
vanilla,
David.
Honey, all these flavours you get from Balvenie, but just maybe
almost
slightly richer than
like
maybe...
like sweet marmalade.
Yep, there we go, that's it. Sweet marmalade.
I do like marmalade.
Citrus.
Toasted marmalade. That's what this is almost
yes,
like.
There we go.
Cheers.
That's it.
Cheers, David.
Have
so we have a little sip.
Yeah. You can try it without water, and then maybe add a wee touch of water to it, because it's quite strong.
Silky, smooth. Yeah, it's a wee bit hot, but I thought it's very good.
Yeah, it's 47.1, but it's still quite smooth. And
amazingly, yeah.
You've got a lot of that richness, and as you say, citrus, you know, orange marmalade, brown sugar, maple syrup, vanilla, honey, you know, oh, butterscotch, all these.
Can I have a splash of water?
Marmalade, yeah. I'll not put much in, just
whatever you think is right, David. I'll go with that.
That's probably enough.
Because you know they say you should never let another man water your whiskey.
You okay. Okay.
But I would of course let David stir.
Okay. Okay, no, thank you. So this is just open up a little bit and just reveal some more of these flavours. Yeah, that citrus orange marmalade is certainly quite evident in it.
Yes.
And maybe you get a slight oakiness, maybe, and that maybe just comes from that. Dark barley, and also from the first four bourbon barrels as well. But
I'd love to hear from you, David. What would you recommend for people at home, the perfect way to sample a whiskey? I mean, you've got your way that you're going to be drinking whiskey when you're in the sample room,
yes,
professionally for work,
yeah,
and then how you would like to enjoy a dram at home in the best way that you enjoy
it. I generally like to add a little bit of water to my whiskey, generally. Maybe whiskey at this age would be much less water, maybe nothing at all. Maybe from the Portwood, 21-year-old and older, then maybe not much water, or just a dash of water. But generally, I'd like to add, if we're drinking a double wood, I would add a little bit of water to it. I might have two parts whiskey, one part water to double wood. And we're used to adding water in the sample room all the time to open up the whiskey, to release the aroma, so you can actually taste more of the whiskey and more of the character of the whiskey by adding just a little dash of water to it. And it should be, you know, still water, you know, maybe bottled water, you know, very pure water. So it's not
too high mineral content.
No, so it's not changing the character of the whiskey.
We're going to try the 26 now, so the day of dark barley. So this is you know, from the exact same distillation, obviously back in 1992, and now 26 years
that's
on.
It, so we, yeah,
great
so
idea.
Again, David, could you please do us the honours of opening this beautiful bottle?
To see how it's really changed.
So this one is a little bit different.
Yes, well, it's matured on for, what, another 12 years?
Yeah, but it's also bottled and as a single cask.
It's also bottled
this
as a single cask. Mm-hmm. This is very much like the single barrel range that we've got. So we decided to bottle.
Yeah, 47.8.
So it's the same strength as our single barrels, the same strength as the 12, 15 and 25.
This is great.
Should we have a sip?
I mean, we are biased. We do love our whiskey, but I seriously do like this taste a lot.
Mm.
Well, because this is 26, it's a bit easier to drink and or taste that high strength, because it's obviously smoother and
rounded
and more rounded. So, but you get that just slightly fuller flavour, slightly spicy, a little bit oaky, maybe, and that's probably from the influence of the dark barley. But you also because it's first full bourbon barrels, you're getting that.
Oh,
you're getting that
tremendous.
Lovely kind of vanilla, honey, sweetness, and I say all these notes of maple syrup, brown sugar, marzipan, butterscotch, all these lovely flavours, citrus marmalade that you talked about are all in this whiskey.
Yeah, I really like that.
And it's not as cloying and sweet as the marmalade note that comes through with the 14. It's now, I'd say, a bit more rounded and balanced with a bit more spice and oak, like you said, coming through.
Yes, I agree.
And I also like the colour. You know, a lot of people think, oh, well, it's 26, it should be darker than this.
Well,
but of course
natural,
it shouldn't be.
Natural colour.
It's American oak matured.
Oh, American
natural
oak.
Colour from the barrel.
And all that great flavour coming out from the oak.
Yeah.
You want a touch of water? Just a dash of water?
Yes, please.
Okay, then.
It has an incredible mouthfeel. It's nice and
much.
Nice and full-bodied on the palate.
As you say, kind of less of the kind of citrus marmalade notes. And, but just that lovely, you know, rich, very much above any of this whiskey, to be fair, from a first world bourbon barrel, but just got that little bit more depth to it, probably from the use of the dark barley.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm going to be putting my order in soon.
I want one.
What a treat.
And there'll be
enjoy
a bottle for the malt master, I'm sure.
Of course.
Of course, yes. Goes without saying, I would say, David.
Well, cheers. Thank you both for sharing these whiskies with us.
Okay, you're welcome. No,
thank you,
David. Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you, Gemma. Thank you.
Thank you. Back upstairs in the maltings, Robbie told us a bit more about how he got started at the Balvenie.
I got a job straight away. I came home on leave. And I was speaking to Don Ramsey from Cooperage, sort of finishing in a few months' time. He says, your name ended the story
Don,
for
Don
a job.
Don Ramsey was our head cooper.
That's right.
At the time, he was 50 years here.
Aye. And he put my name forward here for a job. And I had the job before I even left the Navy. I came down for an interview. I explained I was still in the Navy. He said, that's all right, just come down and see us when you come out. And I got a job more or less the next day.
And I suppose it was a really well-respected job, getting a job in the whiskey industry back then, and it still is today.
Still is today,
well, still is today, yes.
I started then, I started in the warehouse. Well, I started in the still house at Glenfiddich, and I didn't like it much. And the manager at the time, Duncan Stewart, he could see I wasn't very happy there. And he offered me a job in the warehouse, so I ended up in the warehouse for 13 years. And then I came out of shifts in here.
27 years in the
barns. 27 years. Me and the barns were on shifts.
I love the story, Robbie, about when you retired and Humpy, George Garrick, who's one of our stillmen at Glenfiddich now.
Aye.
But he used to work with you here in the Maltings. I love the story of what he gave you as retirement gift to you.
Oh, well, I always say to me, Robbie, when you retire, I've got something for you. So how could he take something for me? That's a couple of years ago yet. He said, I've got something to give to you when you retire. What on earth could it be? And when he came down, he presented me this little note, and I looked at it and thought, God, you kept this note all these years. The wee note I wrote in night shift. I've been watering the steep and I forgot about it, and as water came overflowing and onto the floor here. So I left a wee note for George, and water overflowing in the steep, a bit of a mess, tidy it up and then burn this note when you're finished. And he didn't do it, did he? He kept this note,
he
framed it and presented it. So I just say to him, so you never could, you thought you were bloody tell, could you?
So when you did your night shifts here, You'd be here alone at night, right?
Right. I came, you're covering me. You're covering this the story about the haunting of the Green Lady.
The Green Lady.
The Green Lady, aye.
She's quite a legend here, this Green Lady at Bovenny.
Oh, I used to tell a story to all these visitors that come about to speak about the Green Lady.
She's a darling. She's a darling.
Haunts the warehouse number 24 there, but
yes.
We sometimes think she's a wee nosy in here, and you can hear her footsteps when you're sitting down the stairs and you're rolling at night and the wind howling at you. It's as if somebody's walking about in the flare up here, and you can maybe hear footsteps or somebody shuffling about.
Yes, you just you think to yourself, is that somebody creaking and going along? You said, that's uncommon, it's only me, it's in here. You still hear that?
You still tend to nose you up the stairs to see if there is somebody up here. It does give you a goosebump somebody. Yeah. Christ, is there somebody up there, is there any?
Robbie's worked at the distillery for 42 years. 27 of those he spent in our maltings. Last year he retired and we gave him a memorable send-off.
So Robbie, I suppose after 42 years it was quite an affair when you retired.
Well, I wouldn't say it was an affair, but cause I didn't like a big fuss, so I just said, oh, well, we get together, the shift operators I work with, and we said, we get together in here, just to say cheerio and the abdi for a grandma. But instead of a speech, I came up with a wee poem that I wrote. Tried to write something out, and I thought, well, what can I write about? And I thought, well, I tell stories to visitors sometimes about the haunting of the Green Lady. I might try and put together a poem about that. So I come up with this little poem. So I'll just start to recite it just for you. I was working away with the radio on, singing along to a wheel Kent song, throwing down my very last steep, when I heard the sound of shuffling feet. Well, when I looked up, I couldna believe what I was seeing. But I'm telling you now that I'm nae leaning. There, going ben the loft, was the Green Lady. And on her shoulder, the elusive malt monkey. Well, she could see she gave me quite a scare, as she slowly came forward and sat down in the stair. And the monkey flickered her boot and played with her hair. Then she started to speak, with her voice so low, I had to go and turn off the radio. She said, oh, Robbie, we heard it was time for you to go. So we thought we'd just come down to say cheerio. You see, we've watched through you all these years, throwing down steeps and pulling out flares, teaching others how to use a shield, for a while there even was a coin as wheel. We've heard you tell stories about us too, to loads of visitors and even to film crew. Ah, oh, well, it's new time for us to disappear, but we'll be back another year. And as they walked off down the loft, the monkey looked back for one last peek, and I carried on through and down the steep. But it's a night that lie was bide with me, my very last night shift at the Balvenie. And that's it.
Wow.
That was good. Well done, Robbie.
Bravo.
Got to like.
You're quite a poet, Robbie.
Well, that's a one-off, but that way.
Well, it's very special you're reciting it for us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to it.
So that was the story of the people and the places that made A Day of Dark Barley. For me, the story is inseparable with the atmosphere and the spirit of the distillery. Over the course of this episode, we've heard what it really means to Robbie, Brian, David Mayer and David Stewart to play a part in the making of our whiskey. Robbie's poem really was something special, and I have to say their passion for what they do really translates to a delicious whiskey. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the next podcast in the Balvenie Stories series.